You know that in the United Kingdom they have a capital issues committee, and only those socially and economically desirable investments are allowed by the capital issues committee. In the United States of America, they have the Securities Exchange Commission, which performs much the same kind of function. And if we do not pay great attention to the kind of investment that is taking place in Barbados, particularly by people from outside of Barbados, buying up the land in Barbados and selling it again on the outside market at very extravagant prices, we may wake up one of these mornings to find out that we don't have a country anymore, that it belongs to a group of people or groups of people who are non-resident and uncommitted towards the development of this country itself. This is the only apprehension that I have about the success which we have achieved, because we've been too successful in some respects, and the Tourist Board in its advertising campaigns and promotional campaigns, and generally speaking, what we have been able to do through the Development Board, we may have overreached ourselves in making Barbados a bit too popular. I think that one has to be very careful that when one speaks of politeness and good manners, that it does not carry the connotation of obsequiousness and subservience. The dividing line between those things is a very narrow dividing line. And I can confidently say that there are very few people in Barbados who are obsequious or subservient. But there is a danger that amongst the younger people they may mistake our politeness for obsequiousness and subservience. And therefore, with the aggressiveness which you see now in the young people, their anxiety to assert themselves and command respect, we have to be very careful that we do not drift into the stage where people become rude, unnecessarily rude, because people who are sure of themselves don't have to be rude. It's only the people who are unsure of themselves who have to be rude. And there are areas in the Caribbean where it is very noticeable that visitors get pushed off the pavements or sidewalks because the people who are there feel that they have been kept down for so long, and these people are coming to take over their country, and now that they are independent, they must make sure that nobody walks on the sidewalks but themselves. I have seen this myself, not that I've ever been pushed off of a sidewalk by anyone. Maybe I was mistaken for a native, and that's why I did not have this treatment meted out to me. But I have heard a lot of complaints about this. The behavior of some of our people in the bus stands, which I do not often frequent, even when my car is not working, I usually manage to get a lift. But what I have heard and on few occasions observed about the behavior in our bus stands leaves a lot to be desired.
I think that we can all identify what Mr. Barrow is talking about.
You think he's talking about today, huh?
You would think that. Glenn, you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here.
All right, we got to wrap it up because I got a lot of other calls. But your reaction just now to that clip in particular.
Very perceptive, very conscious of himself. I'm very willing to talk shoot straight from the hip, but either to or for or against Barbadians. And I thought that one is in Dane calling his honesty. You see, he was not an ideologue in the sense that somebody, ironically, you mentioned earlier, Dr. Don Blauman, he was a pragmatic, as most of our leaders have been, a democratic source and a very pragmatic frame of mind who knew the context and knew what would work and what was best for the people. One last thing before you go. You talk when I think it was Leroy spoke about the 97 when the change of government in 76. What brought about that? Mr. Barr had basically pampered the Barbadian thing, and so that when we have the first crisis, the Barbadians were not prepared for it. I saw it differently. I was alive at that time, very much alive, and I remember was that Mr. Barr's economic training did not, in my mind, prepare him for dealing with that issue in the way that would work towards the success of Barbados. And the same thing that they went, they resorted to price controls and that kind of thing, and against what Tom Adams brought as a fresh understanding and thinking approach to the economic principle of Barbados. And therefore, to me, that was the difference in the approach that he, at that point, he did not have the skills, as far as I'm concerned, to deal with it, those pertinent issues of the day.
All right, Glenn.
All
right, thank you, Glenn. That's one perspective.
I wouldn't say that he didn't have the skills, but you must remember, Mr. Barr was coming to the end of a third term, and I think there was a sense of tiredness about Mr. Barr. You know, along the way, he had lost people like the great. Winter Crawford, for example. So a lot, remember they said all roads led to Barrow.
Yeah.
You know, there was a lot on his shoulders. And I think what you saw in 1976 was basically a tired administration after three tremendous terms in office. You know?
Let's take another call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
How are you?
Are you a gentleman?
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Barrow Day to you.
Yeah, I'm going to be pretty brief. And all I hear nothing wrong is what Barbados had to come back now to deal with everything of Barbados. But what I would say, in my brief statement, I think today could have made Mr. Earl Barr proud as we did come together as one people, one party, and do all the celebrations under one umbrella. Instead of the Democratic Labour Party got a little thing, and the next party got a little thing, and it's so... you know, divided still. I mean, at least for one single day. And the leaders was to put the political difference aside and say, well, let me celebrate this honorable gentleman as one people. I think that would be the most proudest day of Mr. Erbar, as you and your panel could discuss that, and I will listen.
Thank you very much for your contribution, sir. You don't know how much that gladdens my heart to hear that, and I can assure you that I will develop that a little later. We take another call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
How are you today, sir?
As usual. Happy evening. Barrow's Day to everyone.
Thank you.
What I would love is those speeches to be put on a CD, wherever, and be made available to the public so that we can hear the things that this man had and for sake of us as a country and as a people. Right.
You really think that people would want to listen to that? Honestly, these young people, these middle-aged people, these older people, you think a range of people would want to listen to that? I'm being very, very serious.
Wait. Hold on, though. Hold on. Right? I think a lot of negativity in what you just said. You know, you're getting a body a chance. See, that's how we got young people class to be, all of them to be violent, all of them to be idiots. There are a lot of positive young people in there, and if we can convince at least one and put him among the ones that's negative, chances are he can rein them in. I don't take negative. I don't live in hope. I believe in getting up and train. Even sometimes when you fail, the way in which you fail can make you stronger.
Sir,
if you allow
I want to support your comment, and there will be no failure in an effort to put out a collection of audio recordings of Mr. Barrow's speeches. In fact, this country really needs to hear from Mr. Barrow, to hear his speeches, to read his speeches, to view them. I have here in my hands a book entitled Fathering a Nation, Barbados and the Legacy of Errol Walton Barrow. It was put together in 2016 by the then High Commissioner to the UK, Guy Hewitt. And basically what it is, he was able to take an earlier publication put together by Mr. Yusuf Hanif, the late Barbadian Guyanese journalist, collected speeches of Mr. Barrow. And Guy was then able to add additional speeches and commentaries from various Barbadian personalities, and he published this very valuable book. I believe that this book should be in every Barbadian home, in every Barbadian school, because Mr. Barrow really represents the best of the Barbadian personality, character, and tradition. And it's important that we benefit from this, an immersion in this man's ideas. Now, I also, when I recognized that Mr. Barrow's centenary was coming up, I simply decided that I had to do something to contribute to celebration of the centenary. And so I produced a 30-page booklet entitled Right Excellent Errol Walton Barrow, Champion of the Caribbean Community. But just like the caller, I didn't just want to have the written word. I wanted to have the audio. Mm-hmm. And so I contacted the CARICOM secretariat, and I tried to get from them. I felt sure they would have an audio recording of that magnificent speech that Mr. Barrow made at the CARICOM Heads of Government Conference in 1986, only to learn that they had kept no recording. So, but I'm with you, caller. This country and our young people in particular will benefit greatly from being exposed to the personality and the ideas of Mr. Barrow, whether it's in book form, it's video form, it's audio form, and we really should do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If I could comment here, I understand and appreciate the point you're making, David. The availability of this material, let it be digital or hard copy, is important. I agree. The next step, however, how do we get it into the minds of people? Mm-hmm. Because if it is just available, as Sankar is in playing, how many young people are going to actually make it a point of accessing?
But before we develop let's take a commercial break so we can mm-hmm. develop this after. We take a commercial break right now.
As I understand it, a republic is different from a monarchy because you don't have a monarch at the head of the state, at the head of government, theoretically or otherwise, and you have a president who is the head of constitutional, head of the country. I really don't think it makes a lot of difference in the 1960s or 1970s in the relationship which we have now in the Commonwealth, whether you are a republic or whether you remain as a country which recognizes the Queen as Queen of the country, the Queen or ruling monarch in Great Britain, because really and truly speaking, the Queen has no real power insofar as independent countries like Barbados, Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, Jamaica, Australia, Canada, and the other places which have so far retained the Queen as head of their governments is concerned. The idea of republic, of course, being that you throw off the last shackles of imperialism. But we cannot really forget our histories. We have come up through an empire, an imperial system in which there was a mother country and there were colonies. And whether we institute a republican form of government by having the president replace the queen as head of state as against head of government, the head of government is usually a prime minister. It wouldn't really make a lot of difference. It's not going to bring a lot more money into any of these countries if we have a republic. I do not think that in Barbados it will make people feel any prouder that they have a republic. As a matter of fact, Barbados being what it is, I can see that a lot of people will have grave doubts because as soon as you mention the word republic, they will say, oh, you want to be like one of these banana republics where they replace the government every 5 weeks and people, the hunter or junta, as the BBC can now say, walk around with dark glasses on for 5 weeks, and then when the president is out, shooting or at the race course, the army moves in and takes over. And this is the kind of connotation that the word republic would have in Barbados, a banana republic. But it would have to be a sugarcane republic or an onion republic in Barbados or something like that. But the popular concept of a republic is a lot of men with dark glasses walking around. And thank God we got rid of that a long time ago. So it doesn't really matter. The Queen is Queen of Barbados. She's not Queen of Barbados in her right of being Queen of the United Kingdom of England, Scotland, Wales, and maybe Northern Ireland.
Welcome back. And before we go back to the panel and that point we were discussing, I just want to give you some idea of what people are saying here on the WhatsApp. This person here is saying, it is history, Sanka. It would make a difference, just saying. This other person here is saying, good morning, Sanka. I would be very interested to listen to those recordings. I disagree with your assertion. Someone else here is saying, we need a digital catalog of all heroes' speeches. I am learning so much. And this other person here is saying, panel, we can ensure the youth get the message by replacing the vulgar videos that are used to fill in gaps on TV with the various motivational speeches, readings, thoughts of Mr. Barrow. And just let me just say, I was playing the devil's advocate. But those of us here in the panel will know that I'm playing devil's advocate, but that's just for everybody else. But the point is that we are getting a lot of support here, and there are no negatives at all here on the WhatsApp as well.
Yes, you were saying, Leroy. So my thing is, how do we get it to the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be a part of our education.
Yeah.
How much West Indian or Caribbean history is taught in our schools? We have merged geography and history and whatever into social sciences. Yeah.
Social studies.
So we don't get to really delve into in any depth to the history of our country.
Well, some people will ask you, why is that important? Why is history important? I mean,
because history is his story. We want to know our story. And the only way we can know our story to guide us in where we go and how we do things is by knowing what we have gone through and how we got here. Now, I have said for some time, there are two things. One is we need to teach civics in our schools again, right? When I was at secondary school, I knew all about the British Constitution. I knew all about parliamentary procedure. I knew how laws were made and all that by studying something called British Constitution, right? If you could think, we had some instances in this country where politicians attempted to do things that showed that they did not even understand what were the basics of civics. So we've got to get to the point, get back to that point where we teach our people about our past. Now, take for example, when we had the crisis that Sir Lloyd Sandiford was faced with, right, in the early
90s, yeah,
right. How was that documented? How did we, if 50 years from now, we are faced with a similar situation as we did then, or we haven't, or we face now? How are our people being taught and made conscious of what we are doing, how we are doing, why we are doing it, so that if we are faced with another instance, that we have people who are geared to deal with it? So I strongly believe that it is time for our sociologists, our historians, our journalists, the people who are in day-to-day contact with what is happening, to put these things down. That we know that this was the problem, these are the things that we did in order to solve the problem, this is how we dealt with it. So that it is a record there as a guide is like a time capsule that we can go and say, this is how our forebears dealt with the problem. It's the same way that we who have lived it can look back and see why Errol Barrow wanted to improve our education, why he wanted to improve our health system, why he felt it was important to have these social services. We can look back and say, why did Grantley Adams bring in the abolish the Located Tenantries Act? Mm-hmm. Why did Tom Adams allow people living in plantation tenantries to buy land at 10 cents a square foot? Why did we develop an international business sector? You know, we who are living now, who live through it,
yeah,
we understand it. But what are we leaving for the next generation to say,
Leroy,
how do we do these
Leroy,
things?
Leroy, let me just come in here. I was once, some years ago, let me make it very clear, this is not something contemporary. Some years ago, I was in the presence of a chief education officer of Barbados. And this person said to me that they had no uses for the subject of history. Now, imagine a chief education officer with that idea, with that perspective. Now, there's almost no subject as important in a developing country than history. In fact, Mr. Barrow's life itself would tell you this. Mr. Barrow's sense of identity, his sense of mission, his self-confidence are all built around his deep understanding of the history of Barbados. And so we are doing our people a great disservice if we do not permit them to root themselves in a historical understanding of our journey as a people. That is what is going to give them the moorings and the perspectives to navigate through the world that we live in and into the future. And so it is to be terribly deprecated, this move that has taken place in our education system to sideline the teaching of history. And it needs to be corrected, but it can only be corrected if a governmental administration has a policy on this. You know, and it must be a fundamental policy that we are going to root our people in our understanding of our history. Thus, this must be a priority subject in the school system.
Let me add here that history, and this is for everybody, history is more than just dates and events.
Exactly.
It's about an analysis of what happened,
mm-hmm,
and when you examine it, how these situations can be avoided in the future.
And it brings to light, the high points of your story, the exactly, things that precisely inspire it you is, and the thing that you look back on as yourself as a continuation of. Exactly.
If you woke up in a desert, right, on a cloudy day, you can't see the sun, you don't know where you came from, how are you going to work out how to get to the next water hole? You cannot know where you're going if you do not know where you came from. Yeah. Full stop. Right? And I can say that if I didn't do science, I would have done history. Because I think it's one of the most important things we have to know. It's not just an academic exercise. Right? And this is why all of the great leaders that we have had in this world were people who understood the history of their people.
You know, it was one of Mr. Barrow's greatest put downs or criticisms of political aspirants. He would say, he's not even read a book about the history. Imagine, he wants to be a political leader in this country, and he's not even read a book about the history of Barbados. He said that to me in relation to several people.
Mm-hmm. And I tell you,
he would dismiss them based on that.
I'll tell you something else that he said once. At an executive council meeting of the Democratic Liberal Party, Mr. Barrow said, Tom Adams has done something which nobody in this room has ever done. And everybody looked around wondering what he was talking about. He said, Tom Adams has read every speech that I have ever made. And I can tell you not one of you here has ever done it. This is why there are people. I heard a man who became a minister of government in a Democrat Liberal Party government say already, man, what Errol Barr's legacy? Errol Barr's legacy dead party. You could understand what happened, right? And this is why when I have to speak, I have to speak in the way that I do. Because I know where that party came from. I understand. I know the when I look back at, like you say, the Crawfords and the Barrows and the Tudors and even the work done by Sir Lloyd Sandiford as a young Minister of Education. When I look back and see what those people did and they understand it. And then they see people do things that are totally contrary to the philosophy that these people practice. It must bother you, it must gall you, you know.
Let's take a call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Right. Gentlemen, I am enjoying this immensely. Someone attempted to make a comment when Glenn came on and said, he's that old. But when y'all hear me now, you're all going to say, Raul, you that old? No, let me go back to...
They usually shocked at my age, too.
let me go back to the very honorable Mr. Barra, a pragmatist. Now, I'm gonna convince y'all who he was a pragmatist. Y'all remember we had in our early day, back in the 50s, 60s, you had the colonial office. Mr. Barra came aboard and said, come here, Mr. McLean, I want whatever. He chose people, he socially revolutionized Barbados by using his own people and slotting them into certain capacities. And sort of the colonial office then became like defunct. He knew people, you want, in the early days we wanted the Archbishop, you had to get one from England, a matron in the hospital, whoever. Mr. Barr, smoothly, without a shedding of any blood at all, the social revolutionization of Barbados took place admirably, and people, when it happened, and transparent before their very eyes, they couldn't understand how he got this done, and not a shedding of blood at all, no upheaval or anything like this. That is what I call a practical approach to problems and situations. Pragmatism at its height. Now, I remember in the 50s, a little boy, in the 60s, it says my age, but don't worry too much. We had earth kitchens in Barbados. The social revolutionization was when you see, I could remember in the country when I see trucks start coming up from courts and those big places, people start to get dinette set, fridge, stove. But latterly, it was TV and things. But you could see the social change. The houses in the 50s were unpainted and black. You could see houses started to be painted properly. I am not saying every house was, but the general acceptance in Barbados was. And the 15 years of Mr. Barr's legacy and ruling socially transformed Barbados into a garden, into something that was so admirable you couldn't but accept that. This is really something of note.
Caller, I want to agree with you, but I just want to, I think we also have to be careful to say that Mr. Barrow didn't do it all alone. Mr. Barrow had some very, very important collaborators. Yes. I mean, we think of the Winter Crawfords, yeah, the T.T. Lewis's, and so forth. Jared. And we have to be very clear. For example, even when we talk about the free education, let's remember that the free education actually started under the Grantley Adams BLP regime with the newer secondary schools. The first free secondary schools were the newer secondary schools started under that BLP regime, where Mr. Barrow was revolutionary because most Barbadians attach greater importance to the grammar schools. Mm. So when he took that step of with and it was T.T. Lewis's idea, let's be clear. So it's not just about Mr. Barrow. I mean, this is his day, it's his centenary, so we're really focusing on him. And he was the leader. He put the stamp on it. He led it. But we must never overlook the fact that he didn't do it all alone, and that there were these outstanding collaborators.
All right, let's take a commercial break and we'll be right back.
the Barbadians were ready for independence and self-government over 350 years ago. And they sent down a series of colonial governors down here who we had to pay out of our taxes, and colonial secretaries and chief secretaries. I think we used to elect our own colonial treasurer because the House of Assembly reserved that right to itself. And they just came down here and they went to the Royal Barbados Yacht Club and they went to the Savannah Club and they wrote home reports on all the politicians and all the civil servants. And they went to a few bazaars and they delivered a message at Christmas time. And they said a lot of sanctimonious things, and you know, usually there were cliches and that kind of thing about the British Empire and that kind of business. And then they went back home and nobody missed them. And there was no program for educating anybody for self-government or independence. As a matter of fact, prior to my coming home in 1950, I never heard the word independence mentioned in Barbados at all. There was no program in the schools for independence. Independence was something which is a God-given right, like breathing air. So that I do not think that one can say that we gained something from the British, because Barbados may have been a totally different kind of place, probably a better place, if we'd never had any imperialism at all. By the very nature of international relationships, something rubs off from one nation to another nation. And that relationship does not necessarily have to be that of an imperial country guiding, inverted commas, the destinies of a colony. Everything that has been accomplished in Barbados has been accomplished by the spirit of voluntary service of our own people here in Barbados, and not by any colonial officials. It has also been accomplished by some of the leaders in the church, people like Bishop Mitchison and so on, who started our educational program, and they didn't get any assistance from any British government to carry out any program of educating people for self-government. I think the people in Barbados became educated for self-government because they were educated. So I don't want to have anyone to have any illusions about how I feel about this matter.
Welcome back. Another good clip that we really got to discuss some more of. But before we go that, let me just go to the WhatsApp, because we get a lot of WhatsApp messages. And you won't believe where all some of them coming from. This one is saying, good morning, what about Ellenborough House? Every administration that came and went and to present never thought it important to preserve the history of this great man, Earl Walton Barrow. And imagine school tours and no Barrow House to go visit, but there's George Washington House that's well maintained. There should be a law against that. And this other person says, greetings from Berlin. And it comes with the area code as well. So it's Berlin, Germany. And greetings to you as well. I hope you're not too cold. has anyone ever read the Independence Declaration between Barbados and England? After reading the French Declaration to its colonies, I realized we were never told about our declaration with Britain. Our history started long before slavery. Was never taught this at Combermere. And this other person is saying, I agree with Mr. McLean. The DLP abandoned the skipper after the general election of 1986. I can give many examples. And this last one, I wasn't in Barbados when Mr. Barr was the head of Barbados, so I would be very interested in having such a book, as a book you mentioned, David. Why not put his speeches online so that those who weren't here or the younger generation can access them? All right. We got a lot to talk about. And let me take this one call before we go back in this. You're on the air. Yeah. Good morning.
Yes, please. I'm continuing. Now, I want to fortify Mr. McLean when he said about this, the free secondary education aspect. It is a political travesty to interfere with the free secondary education that was purported strongly further established by Mr. Barrow.
Tertiary education you're talking about.
Sorry?
University education, no, university, that was tampered
right,
with.
Right, yeah. Right. That was right. That's what I'm speaking of. Now, let me hear something to say. A caller some time ago made a comment to me that his children got tertiary education under the auspices of Mr. Barney went on. I said, I agree with you, sir. But I want you to come and tell me now about your grandchildren. It has to be on the auspices of Miss Mia Marley. Because as Mr. Leroy said, it was discontinued, which was a political travesty, and I stand by that. I am saying we had two major political decisions made in Barbados with the free secondary education. I see that freehold tenantry act, given all of those persons for land at 5 cents a square foot.
10 cents a square foot.
$0.10 a square foot. Sorry about that. 10 cents a square foot. I suspected that Mr. Adams, like, he would have given them for free, but because you want a little monetary in it to make it legal, 10 cents per square foot, it was one of the great things that has happened to Barbados. Going all of those territories now, see those persons own the land, lovely houses, etc., etc. So, I mean, it is, there are things of note, and I will conclude by saying that the legacy of Mr. Barr should be so entrenched and kept preserved. Anything to attempt to remove any part of it, like that free secondary removal,
free
should never happen again.
But you know, Sanka,
yes,
that, the thing
all right, sir,
free
thank you very much for your
right?
call.
What made it such a travesty was that the then Minister of Education, when he announced the imposition of the tuition fees, he assured the country that there would be no fall off in university enrollment as a result of these tuition fees. Within a year, close to 4,000 Barbadians had dropped out of the Cavill campus. But there was, and so when that manifested itself, you would have thought that since this was a repudiation of the initial idea that there would be no fall off, that you would now be, there would now be a change to the policy. There was no change. And so we are now trying to rebuild because thousands of Barbadians fell out of tertiary education. Many hundreds fell out of Barbados Community College, Samuel Jackman Prescott Polytechnic. And part of the problem that I suspect we are having is part of some of this. I think that is the root of some of the contemporary manifestations of social problems we are having with relatively young people. Because if you create a situation where so many young people are taken out of the education system, where do they end up?
Yeah.
They end up on the blocks,
David, that brings me to the point back to the thing about pragmatism. I always say that pragmatism is not a political philosophy, right? Because you would say that a person is pragmatic in a particular situation. It's not that you're pragmatic, you know. It's that you understand the context of what you're doing, and you do it in a manner that is in keeping with the environment in which you're operating. But if you're talking about pragmatism, it has to be still rooted in a particular philosophy or ideology, right? So Mr. Barrow made the point already that he was an unapologetic democratic socialist, right? So whereas a decision or point of view that he had at a particular point in time but have been seen as pragmatic, it was rooted, it still had that, it was still anchored to that philosophy and that ideology which he had of democratic socialism.
Well, let's deal with a number of things that came out of the extract. We heard in one extract Mr. Barr talking about the land should belong to Barbadians. We know that a subsequent administration, under Owen Athan in particular, thought about the price of land should go to
the best
economic value. How does that sway Mr. Barrow's philosophy? How do we look at that?
You know, around that same time, I'll tell you, you know, I don't think that position was any, that the position taken by the administration was any accident. It was ill-conceived as far as I'm concerned, but I remember in 1984, I think it was, 84, 85, I was invited to a youth leaders conference in the United States by the US government. I could not understand why I was invited, because the Democratic Labour Party was in opposition. and nobody from the Barbados Labour Party was invited. I went to Mr. Barrow and told him. He said to me, they were trying to brainwash you, but go ahead. Right? During that trip, we went to various states. And one of the things that happened was that we had a meeting with a group called the Heritage Foundation, which is a right-wing think tank that was closely associated with the Republican Party. And in one of the sessions, a lady said that the countries in the Caribbean should forget about things like agriculture and manufacturing and sell the land to wealthy American retirees who want to build retirement homes. Okay? So, if you see that as a policy, and as I say, this was in 1984-85, if you embrace that as a policy, and you say, okay, the rich people who want land, let's sell it to land. Okay, so if you're providing land for wealthy American retirees, how many doctors you want, how many accountants you want, how many lawyers you want? In other words, your education system will not be reduced to providing maids, housekeepers, and gardeners. You understand? So we must understand that when people throw these things at us, you know, allow these rich people to come in. And I'm a little concerned about the policy that I've heard recently about this pathway to citizenship by rich people. Right? I am not saying that Barbados should put up any walls to stop anybody regardless of what may be the financial means. But I always believe that it is dangerous. People say, oh, Canada does it and America does it and all kinds of things. But they have mechanisms to deal with any negative fallout from that system. Do we have the mechanisms and the tools to deal with it? So this is something we have to be very careful with.
We have to understand our history very clearly. For most of we have been Barbados has been in existence as a nation since 1625. For most of that period of time, this place was an extremely oppressive, brutal place for the masses of our people. Because for most of that history, the instruments of state power were in the hands of a white, racist, planter, merchant oligarchy. It was only in the late 1940s, and particularly after the attainment of universal adult suffrage in 1951, mm-hmm. when the masses were able to establish our own political parties, our parties were able to win government and to take control of the instruments of state power and use those instruments of state power to uplift our people, to build schools and housing areas and to develop industry and national insurance and all the rest of it. And so if we look at Barbados, we know the importance of government. And we know the importance for the masses of people of having governments that understand the power that they have within their hands and how that power has to be used to protect the people and to protect, you know, the fundamental interests of the people to own their own country, including the land mass of their country. And so that is our history. And we need to learn it well. And governments in Barbados need to understand what is their historical responsibility to the masses of our people. And I agree with Leroy. I am this for a newly developing country. Citizenship is at the core of your nationhood, and therefore that is a very precious thing. That should not be bought. One should not be able to buy that. You earn it.
But you heard the clip that we played before, where Mr. Barrow was making the point that, in terms of people would want to come to your country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't afford to be. He's the only passport he has was a Barbadian passport.
Yeah, and you want to welcome people. First of all, we want to welcome our Caribbean brothers and sisters. These are our brothers and sisters. We all have come mm-hmm. through the same experience. not a problem there. Mr. Barrow is the champion, the builder, the architect of the Caribbean integration mm-hmm. movement. But I don't think that's what Leroy is talking about. We are talking about this idea that, you know, we have this citizenship by investment programs in several Caribbean countries wealthy mm-hmm. foreigners, not talking Caribbean brothers and sisters now, wealthy foreigners can purchase citizenship. I would hate that Barbados should ever go that road. I think it dilutes your nationalism, the importance of that great badge of citizenship, what it means, and that's not the kind of development we want. We want Mr. Barrow is about a development that is autonomous, that is self-reliant, that is self-directed, that is solid. That's why we sought to develop a manufacturing industry and so forth. And we sought to educate our people and to take them to the level where they could take responsibility for establishing the enterprises that will see to the development of the country. Yep. So, but a government and a leader has to be conscious of those responsibilities and has to be conscious that they have to protect the fundamental interests of the country.
But Sanka, you know, before I respond to that part of it, I want to respond to something David said earlier. The whole idea of our history and all that. Teaching the history of our people now is not only about knowing what happened in the past, but we are also, leaders are not born, right? Leaders emerge based on the experiences. Okay? So when we teach our children now the history of our people, we are shaping the minds of our future leaders. Yeah. Right? So it is not about telling people about yesterday only. It is putting people in a contextual mode that they know down the road, I am training you to take over the leadership of this country. That should be our whole thought pattern when we educate our people, right? Because I hold the view that every generation must be better off than the one that went before. And it cannot happen if you do not equip them with the tools to do so. But getting to the thing about people being able to buy citizenship. Now, if a person is in a position that they could spend $200,000, let's say, to buy citizenship of this country, then they must be in a position that they could invest in this country substantial sums of money. Why do they need to get, why does any wealthy person need to buy citizenship of Barbados or any other country? That is a question that must be asked. If you have so much money, why is it important that you can have citizenship of a country other than your own country?
Let's say though that, as far as I'm aware, the present government of Barbados has not come with any proposal to establish any citizenship by investment program. So true. I think we are speculating.
But I think it was made by a minister of government. What I think
we are saying is that we are sending out a precautionary idea.
And what we're saying is that Mr. Barrow will never be out of sync with the fundamental
Barbados developmental path that was set in place
from the
time of universal adult suffrage, the first Barbados Labour Party government, the Democratic Labour Party government. Our fundamental developmental path has never been about an idea such as
quite frankly,
we've got to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.